Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu presented a 20-point plan last Monday aimed at establishing a ceasefire in Gaza and bringing an end to the two-year-long conflict. But there was some surprise at the appointment of former British Prime Minister Tony Blair to a board that is going to be tasked with overseeing peace in the Middle East. Can Tony Blair, who, let's face it, is tarnished by his role in the invasion of Iraq, really be an honest broker in the region? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty.
To ensure the success of this effort, my plan calls for the creation of a new international oversight body, the Board of Peace, we call it, the Board of Peace, sort of a beautiful name, the Board of Peace, which will be headed not at my request, believe me, I'm very busy, but we have to make sure this works. The leaders of the Arab world and Israel and everybody involved asked me to do this, so it would be headed by a gentleman known as President Donald J. Trump of the United States. That's what I want, is some extra work to do, but it's so important that I'm willing to do it. And we'll do it right, and we're going to put leaders from other countries on, and leaders that are very distinguished leaders. And it'll be quite the board. Working, everybody wants to be on it now.
Well, Donald Trump, which won't come as a surprise to anyone, certainly believes that his own involvement is the key to this plan's success. He said that the conflict is very close to being resolved, but he also warned that unless Hamas accepts the proposal, Israel will act alone. Hamas have been given a couple of days to consider the proposals. The warning sounds a little like an ultimatum. But what exactly is the proposal being put before Hamas? Many critics have said the plan looks like a neo-colonial project, worsened by the creation of a so-called Board of Peace, chaired by Donald Trump and joined by none other than Tony Blair. Blair is a man whose legacy in the region remains deeply controversial, but since leaving office, he's been the official envoy representing the Middle East Quartet. He's been involved in numerous programs through his own foundation, and he is known to have consulted frequently with Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's a key interlocutor between Netanyahu's key advisors and the leaders of Saudi Arabia and the UAE.
The difference between the Northern Ireland peace process and the Israeli-Palestinian one is that in Northern Ireland, we were able to achieve peace, but without an agreement as to what the final outcome. You know, there's still a difference of opinion. You know, the unionists want Northern Ireland in the UK. The nationalists want it united with the south of Ireland. Whereas in the case of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the irony is there is an agreement amongst most reasonable people that you need to have a two-state solution. But it's the circumstances that make that extremely difficult to negotiate. And I have come to the conclusion over a number of years, and when I go back to the Middle East soon, it'll be, I think 270th visit since leaving office. So I've been there a lot, and I'm deep in the politics of the region. And I think you're only going to get peace now if there is, you can create the circumstances of genuine cultural acceptance, that it's not just about where do the borders go and, you know, some of the detailed elements of negotiation. It's you're going to have to win the hearts as well as the minds if you've got any chance for peace.
Speaking to News Talk, Blair's longtime advisor, Alistair Campbell, argued that the former Prime Minister was a good choice for the role.
I think that Tony's spent long enough in the region and working in the region, both when he was working for the UN, the Quartet, but also just in the work that he does through his own institute. I think he's got very good relations on both sides. Now, that doesn't mean that he doesn't on both sides have people who, for various reasons, don't like him. But I don't think that matters ultimately. I think that he's got enough cred. Yes, he's got cred with the Israelis, but he's also got quite a lot of cred with a lot of the Palestinians and the Arab states. Now, he's a controversial figure. Trump's a controversial figure. Netanyahu's a controversial figure. It's very rare to get people in modern politics who are not controversial, but I think the basic question, could Tony bring something but both in terms of his experience and his intelligence and his contacts, could he bring something to a genuine process? Then I think the answer to that is yes.
But how do those in the Middle East view the legacy of Tony Blair? And is there any prospect of success for the latest peace plan? Well, to discuss this, I am joined from Lebanon by journalist and author Rania Abouzeid. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Rania.
Thank you.
Now, I said at the very beginning, at the outset there, that there was some surprise amongst perhaps some journalists and members of the public when they heard that Tony Blair might be involved in some role in the governing of Gaza going forward. But to many others, there wasn't. I think his name has been mentioned and questioned in the last number of weeks because he has been working behind the scenes. And he did have a hand in crafting this 20-point peace plan, didn't he?
He did, and that's why there was less surprise but more anger and disgust at this man's continuing role in anything to do with the Middle East. Tony Blair's legacy, he will forever be stained, and he frankly should be haunted by the blood of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. He is despised in the region. He is considered a war criminal, one who, like George W. Bush and other U.S. officials who were involved in the invasion of Iraq, was never held accountable for destroying a country and for the deaths of so many Iraqis. So his appointment was certainly not welcomed in the region. And I can say that unequivocally across the board.
Let's look at this Board of Peace. Donald Trump has said there that he would be on it. Tony Blair's name is mentioned and he put out a statement to that effect. Who else would be on that board and what role would Palestinians have in the administration of Gaza?
It's Orwellian wording, the Board of Peace, but it's actually a neo-colonial imperialist imposition of foreigners who will oversee a Palestinian interim sort of transitional authority of technocrats. There is no putting lipstick on this pig. This is a foreign board that will basically sort of treat the Palestinians like children who need to be administered, who can't administer their own futures.
Talk to me about Tony Blair, particularly in the role that he had as quartet on the Middle East after he resigned as Prime Minister in 2007. Who appointed him? What was the purpose of the role? And what success did it have?
Well, he was the Middle East advisor to the Quartet of Nations, the Western states. And I mean, that, you know, his involvement in the quartet alone should disqualify him from having any role in Gaza, because he achieved nothing, frankly. Palestine and Israel were no closer to peace under Tony Blair, you know, when Tony Blair held this position. So it's really unclear, like, what are his credentials to be running Gaza? Quite apart from the fact that just the mere fact that this man in particular, or any foreigner, would be sort of the viceroy of Gaza, adds insult to very deep injury.
Let's go back to what he did as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom and the sense among Palestinians that he felt a certain sympathy for Israel all along. What are the examples of that?
Well, that is clear not just in under Tony Blair's tenure, but under successive British governments and indeed American governments. You know, America is often presented as the mediator in anything to do with Israel and the region. Let's look at Trump's role in this so-called peace plan, which most people in the region here consider, as you said in your opening, an ultimatum, because it was not negotiated with the Palestinians. In fact, there was no Palestinian input, once again underscoring the approach that the West has generally taken to Palestinians and more broadly to the Middle East.
He has long warned about the threat posed by Islamist extremism in the area. How do you think they've shaped his politics and his beliefs when it comes to the region?
Well, I can't speak to what goes through Tony Blair's mind and what he thinks about certain things. But, Hamas, for its part, has said in terms of this conflict that has been ongoing now for 2 years, it has repeatedly said that it will relinquish any sort of governance role in Gaza. So they've made that clear. But what the sticking point is on the question of disarmament, because if we look at one of the 20 points of this 20-point plan, it calls for the demilitarization of Gaza, and it refers to Israel's security. It does not refer to Palestinian security and how Palestinians might defend themselves or protect themselves from a state that, according to the UN, is committing genocide against the Palestinians. Let's not forget, it was only two short weeks ago, that a UN commission concluded that Israel was engaged in acts of genocide against Palestinians, a ruling that also gels with what Amnesty International and other international human rights bodies, including Israeli human rights bodies, have described as an Israeli genocide in Gaza.
What Palestinian should be put on this board of peace? I'm just wondering, who is the individual or what is the political organization or the political party that can be tasked with managing the future of Gaza?
Well, that's a question for Palestinians to address and for Palestinians to decide on. They have to have input in their own future and who represents them. There is a Palestinian Authority, as you rightly stated, which is in charge of governing the West Bank. Now, that is problematic to many Palestinians who consider it a very corrupt body, one that is engaged in security pacts with Israel that many Palestinians find problematic. But there are many qualified Palestinians in the vast diaspora. There are figures like Mustafa Barghouti, who is a politician. There are ambassadors around the world. This is, again, a question for the Palestinians to address themselves.
Is there a role for Hamas?
That is, again, for the Palestinians to decide. Having said that, Hamas has said that it will relinquish any governance of Gaza. So it's prepared to step away from governing Gaza. And, whether or not it stands in elections further down the line is something for Palestinians to discuss and decide and determine, because it is ultimately their future, or it should be their future.
But obviously Israel has to have a role in this too, given the conflicts between the two regions.
Israel historically has always had a role. I mean, look, history is important. Context is important. Israel withdrew its settlements from Gaza in 2005, but when Hamas was democratically elected in 2007, Israel imposed a siege on the territory. So Israel has effectively been in charge of anything and anyone. It has, security, political and economic control over Gaza, and it has had that for many, many years. So it's not going to step away. But under this plan, this new American and Israeli plan, there is talk about it maintaining what is referred to as a security perimeter inside Gazan territory. So it's going to maintain an occupation of sorts in parts of Gaza, and it's going to eat into Gazan territory.
But what is the format, I suppose, Rania, for getting those Palestinian voices to the table to discuss the future of Gaza?
Well, there was an Egyptian plan that was presented to the Arab League many months ago, and it was agreed by the Arab League. And this Egyptian plan centered Palestinians in the rebuilding, not the rebuilding, the physical rebuilding, but in the governance of Palestine. And it also referred to an independent technocratic committee that would administer Gaza while rubble was cleared and some rebuilding was commenced. That plan was rejected by both Israel and the US. So there are other alternative plans out there, but it's about whether or not all of the parties can agree to them.
Talk to me about Tony Blair's legacy in the region following the invasion of Iraq and the war there.
Bloodstained, as simple as that. I mean, the only thing that many Middle Easterners think that Tony Blair should be running is a tap in a jail cell at The Hague. But he was never held accountable for his role in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis.
And how widespread is that belief, Rania?
Well, I mean, I'm a journalist, so I look at what's being said, what's being reported, what is being written, what both officials are saying, and also what people are saying on talkback radio and things like that, what the political talk shows are talking about. And it is almost universally despised. In fact, I'd be hard-pressed to come up with somebody who would welcome Tony Blair's involvement in anything to do with the Middle East. It's a very, very sore spot, and his role is not forgotten. It may have been more than 20 odd years since the invasion of Iraq, but people here have long memories, and they don't forget so much blood.
And what about life there now? What is it like? What is the legacy of that invasion and that war?
Well, I mean, you know, many Iraqis often say that they used to have one Saddam, now they have many. So the fall of Saddam Hussein, while he was a murderous, despised dictator himself, it paved the way for the rise of his arch nemesis in Tehran. And, you know, there were no sectarian militias in Iraq under Saddam Hussein until the U.S.-led invasion in 2003, and then sectarian militias proliferated. There was no al-Qaeda in Iraq before the 2003 U.S.-led invasion. There would be no ISIS without al-Qaeda in Iraq. So you know, the ripple effects of that invasion continue to haunt the Middle East all of these decades later.
This war in Gaza has been going on for over 2 years now, and the American authorities seem to believe that this is the closest they have to a ceasefire and agreeing peace in the region. If it is rejected by Hamas, and you say it is not going to work, then are we not just going to continue to see bloodshed and genocide in that area?
Look, nobody wants the conflict in Gaza to end more than the people of the region. We have been inundated day in, day out with horrific images. Your media might be censored more over there in terms of the gruesomeness of the images that we're seeing. Amputated children, hospitals bombarded. They're all war crimes. Everybody here wants an end to the conflict as soon as possible, but under what conditions? Because, you know, are they just going to sort of legalize Israel's occupation and just agree to it? Because that's what many Palestinian commentators are saying about this current plan that is on the table. Even Qatar, which was one of the Arab states that is involved in the mediation, and that was consulted on the text of this agreement. I have to say that, you know, Qatari officials have said that the text that was presented as the final text was not the text that they initially received, according to press reports. But they are saying, hang on a second, some of these details need to be discussed. So there has to be some sort of a back and forth in terms of the nitty-gritty and in terms of nailing down timelines and other things that are part of this, these 20 points. But having said that, Trump assumes, you know, in the way that he does, that Hamas needs to either agree to this in 3 or 4 days, or, as he said at the White House, he gives Israel permission to, quote, finish the job. And the job, according to the UN Commission and according to human rights organizations around the world, is genocide. Is that acceptable in 2025?
Do you just in general, Ronnie, think that the idea of an external imposition of an administration or a governing authority in a region just doesn't work?
The Middle East has been scarred by colonial enterprises. You know, Israel came about because of the British Balfour Declaration that paved the way for the creation of the State of Israel. So this is a region that has been scarred by colonialism and by endeavors such as this. So it's a very, very sensitive subject when you consider, once again, you know, colonial subjugation by foreigners. It's a very difficult pill for many people here to swallow.
Do you not see this as possibly a short-term solution to try and stabilize the region, to get a ceasefire, to get the hostages released, to get aid in, and to try and stop this genocide? That as an interim solution, it is a good one, because the long-term solution here would be to allow the Palestinians to self-govern.
So all of those things that you mentioned, the entry of humanitarian aid, for Palestinians to remain on their territory, for the killing to stop, for the exchange of captives, they are all basic human rights. And like, Israel has a legal obligation to not, for example, use starvation as a weapon of war, as it has been doing, according to numerous international human rights organizations. So these are sort of like the baseline. You have to stop the killing. Humanitarian aid should be permitted into a besieged enclave. If these things are now being presented as concessions, that's a very sad commentary on the state of the world and international law.
Yeah, it is a sad commentary, but it's also the reality, is it not?
We have to accept the reality. I mean, these are bigger questions. What is happening now in Gaza, you know, has huge ramifications for the so-called rules-based system and questions of international law. Both leaders and people in the region here want an end to the bloodshed. They want an end to Palestinian suffering, and also for the Israeli hostages to return home. But it's a question of how we arrive at that. Now, some of the Arab leaders are discussing the details of this plan, like Qatar and others. Hamas is also discussing this plan, and we'll wait and see if they are allowed to make any suggestions and if those suggestions are accepted or not. There are also concerns about who is going to guarantee this plan, because previous ceasefires have been broken. You know, the last ceasefire was supposed to be, I think, a three-phase ceasefire, and Israel broke it after the first phase. Now, the first phase of this 20-point plan calls for the return of Israeli hostages, and then some Palestinians will be released. But what is to guarantee that Israel doesn't resume its hostilities after it gets its hostages back? So these are all questions that are no doubt being discussed at the moment and that will need to be addressed.
Rania Abu Zeid, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk Daily and giving me that perspective, and one I don't think we've heard much in the coverage over the last number of days.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Don't forget, you can listen back to this and every episode of the podcast on the Go Loud Player. Just search for News Talk Daily. Until tomorrow morning, from me, Ciara Doherty. Goodbye.